I also had to learn this about myself, that I shouldn't plot because then I lose interest. Mm-hmm. And also my just everything falls into place anyway at the mm-hmm. end.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast, where we focus on how authors found success, looking at strategies that have taken them to the top of the bestseller charts, as well as what they've learned from their mistakes. Because being an indie author is more than knowing the latest marketing trend. It's about being innovative and creative and learning from your mistakes.
Welcome to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. I'm Sarah Rosette.
And I'm Jamie Albright. And this week on the show, we have
Julia Sterling.
Yes, Julia is a German author. And it was such a great interview. So mm-hmm. insightful.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We talked to her about translating your books into German, like when you should do that. Just kind of tips for covers. Mm-hmm.
Translation in general.
Translation in general. So yeah, so we had a great time talking with mm-hmm. her. Mm-hmm. And she does a German promotion mm-hmm. similar to the Zoe Bub and also a conference that mm-hmm. they're having, like the first kind of indie publishing conference there. She's very excited to talk to her about that. So that's all coming up.
Yeah. So you got any news? Because we're recording this the day after we recorded the last one, because we're trying to get shows ready for you guys for the through the holidays. So
okay, we're a little thin on news.
I know some of you are just going to be so sad so about shocked. That.
I don't really have anything new to talk about, except just been doing admin today, and that's not mm-hmm. really super exciting. But that's like all I got.
I don't really have anything else except to say I'm still running my branding special. If anybody is interested, $125. That's more than $100 off my consulting. And the calls that I've had so far have been so much fun. And and I think they've helped. I mean, you know, it's sort of helped me see some things about branding that I had really not thought about, just from questions, you know, that are being asked. But I sort of think that what I'm noticing is that with AI and things coming along, you know, you're having a real strong fan base that knows you mm-hmm. Is important, but also having this really strong author brand can be important going forward. And it's been super fun. So if you're interested, you can email me or go to my website. All of that's in the show notes if you're interested.
Yep. All those links will be in there.
Yep.
So, all right. Well, I guess we should get on with Julia's interview.
Let's do that.
All right. Here's Julia. Today, we're really happy to talk with Julia Sterling. Hi, Julia. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We are great. We are so happy you're here.
Yes. So let me read your bio and we'll get right into the questions. Julia Sterling is a German romance author who writes time travel and small town romance. Mm-hmm. Before she started her career as a romance novelist, her corporate job took her to North Carolina, where she lived and worked for 4 years. This experience paved the way to her true passions, coaching, personal development, and, of course, writing romance novels. In addition to writing books, she organizes promotional events for romance novels in Germany, a local equivalent to Zoe Bub, and hosts a conference for German romance novelists. Julia's home is in Heidelberg, where she lives with her husband, their two children, her parents, and a dog within romantic vineyards. Sounds lovely.
It does sound lovely. It does.
It is.
Yeah, I bet. Well, tell us how you got into writing.
As many authors, I always wanted to be a writer, mm-hmm. But I wanted to write children's books because that was what I was reading. Mm-hmm. But then I ventured into journalism and I studied biology to become a science journalist. Mm. And but while I was still in university, I found the books of Diana Gabaldon, Outlander. Mm-hmm. And I found out that she was a biology professor. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of that gave me permission that I was allowed to write as well, because I always thought, like, I'm a science journalist. I'm I'm a biology major. I'm not allowed to write romance novels. And but she did. So it was like, that was the first time I got permission to do it. And so there were a lot of permissions later as well.
Yeah.
And then it took me like, I don't know, 19 years to finally self-publish my first book, because before that, I always kept abandoning manuscripts. I always started them, and then I didn't want to go through this whole gatekeeper traditional publishing process. And so I just, it took me a long time, but now I'm here and I'm happy.
Awesome. Awesome. I love that. Yeah. I love Outlander. All things Outlander, those books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It turned my world around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting how if you can see somebody else doing something similar, like if they have some sort of similarity to you, it does give you that ability to think, oh, I could do this too. So
yeah, it's possible.
Well, what is your definition of success?
So I had a German podcast where we interviewed women who had integrated their passion into their lives. And so we interviewed them. And before we started it, I did it with a friend. We said, like, when is the podcast a success? And we said, when we changed one person's life. And we already achieved that before we started, because we recorded, I don't know, 20 interviews or so before we started. And that changed our lives. And also sometimes the lives of the women, because it was so inspiring, and with all the talking that we did. And so it was so relaxed when we published the podcast that the pressure was off, because we had already achieved what we thought was a success. And it, of course, it went on and there were more successes, but it already felt good when we started. And so I adopted that when I started publishing. First, it was just finishing the book, because I always had trouble finishing books.
Me too.
And then publishing it. And that was already a success. And so since then, I'm just happy doing whatever it is. And of course, sometimes I have goals. But from the beginning, it felt like a success, because I had mastered to write the book and publish it. And people were reading it. And the first week, I remember I published it and I didn't look at the numbers for the first week. That was good, and because then I had, like, I don't know, 4,000 page reads and 9 sold copies after the first week, and it was like I was in heaven. And so that was the best time I looked at the numbers. So yeah.
That's great. That's great. Well, what do you wish you'd known about writing and craft when you started?
I wish I'd known myself better, a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great answer.
Because I always thought I had to do it a certain way. As I said, I was still in university. Now I'm 44. And I always listened to I didn't listen to podcasts. It was 2001. But I read books, and later I listened to podcasts and so on. And people always said stuff like, you have to do the first draft, and then you have to revise it, you have to print it out and to mark it with a pen, whatever, and then transfer it back to your laptop. It's like, oh, can't do that.
That's just too much work.
Yes. I hate editing. I hate it. And I know some people love it, but I just hate it. And I thought something was wrong with me. And so I just started the next manuscript and never finished, because I didn't want to revise it. And then I stumbled upon the cycling method by Dean Wesley Smith, that you just write and editing while writing it. Then when you're done, you're done. And I send it off to the editor. And since I've been doing this, everything's fine. And I can publish now the books and really fast, because I know that's how I am. And I have a coaching training. So I'm a coach. And I'm interested in all the coaching and personal development stuff. And so now I know myself so much better. And if I'd known that earlier, I would have published earlier. And but it's fine. That was just my way to to go. But I wish I would have known myself better. Yes.
Yeah. I love that. And I love that you found something that you can do that really does fit right in with who you are and your personality. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. I haven't gotten to that point yet. I'm still trying to find my way.
Yeah.
Because I change things, I guess. Do you plot?
Not really.
No, see, I change so much.
I always tried, but then I, so from my strengths perspective, I'm also futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
And when I plot, the book is written.
Yes.
It's like, I'm done. Mm-hmm. And I'm not interested in the book anymore because I also write to entertain myself. And I'm just not interested in the book anymore. It's the same but the books I've written and published, when readers want to talk to me about them, sometimes I don't know.
I can't remember.
Yes, I can't remember. It's like, oh yeah, that guy, right?
Yeah, so,
because they're done. And it's I also had to learn this about myself, that I shouldn't plot because then I lose interest.
Mm-hmm.
And also everything falls into place anyway at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's fine. I learned to trust the process and myself. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm on book 24 now or something. So mm-hmm. I know, even though sometimes in the middle, I'm always like, this time everything goes wrong. This time it will not work
out. It's always worked in the past.
It does. It always do.
But we always doubt ourselves, don't we? Like, it's always worked. Yeah. Even like, I don't always write a book the same way every time. You know, sometimes I'll outline, sometimes I'll have a loose idea jotted down, outlined, not anything formal. Sometimes I use images, but there's always that point when you're like slightly terrified. It's just not going to happen, even though we have, you know, in the past we can look back. So I guess that's just typical of all writers, no matter how we write. I think we're
And accepting this. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But when you know yourself, you know that you will work through it. Somehow it will always work out. So, and to have this trust in yourself, that's so important to just stay calm and carry
on. Don't panic. No panic. Well, what about marketing? What do you wish you'd known about marketing?
I think it's the same answer. I was very lucky, that right from the beginning, I found the things that work for me, even though I didn't know myself that well in the beginning. I had this coaching business before, and I knew that a newsletter was important. So I set up a newsletter from the beginning and started to write it. The second a person signed up who I didn't know. Which was weird because what I think, like, 2 months or so, I just wrote newsletters to one person.
Oh my goodness.
But I pretended it were like 100. But then it was really, I also listened to a podcast with Lucy Score, and she said that she has always this bonus scenes in the end, where people have to sign up for the newsletter to get the bonus scenes. Mm-hmm. So I did this from book one for each book. For each book, I have very long bonus material. Like, it's one time I wrote the same story from the point of view of the guy, because
really already, is your bonus material?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
It's gotten out of hand a little bit.
I bet your readers love that though, because it's like a whole nother story, right?
It is. Yeah. So the couple was apart for 8 years, and I had to tell what happened to him in those 8 years. Mm-hmm. And they get very long material. I do serials in my newsletter, and then I publish them as a book later. Mm-hmm. I found that the newsletter is the right medium for me, because I can talk to my readers. I know that I can entertain them. I do videos for them. So I think, and if I had known myself better, from the beginning, I would have come there even faster. But I think it was already quite fast.
That so is, how do you do the videos?
Like, what do you mean how?
Well, I mean, I don't know. Do you just talk to them or do you just?
Yeah, I put myself with my cell phone, mm-hmm. and then I just talk about what I normally would write down. Mm-hmm. But I also write it down because there's so many people who can't watch videos because they are at work or whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They don't have headphones on, mm-hmm. or they don't want to watch a video. Mm-hmm. So I also write the same stuff, but I'm just, when I'm really excited about something, I want to show a cover. I always do cover reveals first in my newsletter. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I do cover reveals as a postcard. So I send them physical postcards. Mm.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
And when I tell them that this is up, then I will do a video, or I'm not doing video every time because then I have to wash my hair.
Yeah. That's why we're not on YouTube. I mean, you don't see our face on YouTube. Yeah. Yeah.
We totally understand that.
And what I also do is I have a reader team that mm-hmm. for every book, but they can apply for it for every book. I don't have a team that is always there. So they always can apply, and then I will choose, or I will just, I don't know, draw the winners.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I get like 500 applications for that. And I always do the video to tell them that this is going to happen. So
that's awesome. That's just such great ideas.
Yeah. And your serial, or you said you do serials in your newsletter. Is that like based off of characters in the books they've already read, or is it something totally new? How do you do that?
So I have this time travel series, mm-hmm. and in the first book in the series, there's this guy, and we don't know his story because it's only from the women's point of view. Mm-hmm. And he's looking for his sister. He's a time traveler himself, and he's looking for his sister and his mom, mm. and he can't find them because they are somewhere lost in the past. Mm-hmm. And readers always ask me, so what happened to the sister and the mom?
Okay.
Mm. And so I had to somehow solve this. And then I thought, okay, nobody would be interested in it if they hadn't read the other books. So my readers would be interested. And so I started writing that as a serial. Uh-huh. It's gotten out of hand as well. It's my longest book ever. But I had a lot of fun doing it. And I sent it every week for 10 months. And yeah, it was great.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing. I love that. Your people must love being on your newsletter.
Yeah.
They stay. I have, it's rare that somebody unsubscribes. Mm-hmm. So because mm-hmm. just, I can't.
Well, you're giving value. You're giving value. And I love that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, what assumptions did you make at the beginning of your writing career, and looking back, did they turn out to be right or wrong?
I thought that mm-hmm. you can't make money in the German market.
And your books are all in German, right?
They are all in German, yes. I've translated a few, but the translation weren't good into English, and the English market is so hard. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. in the beginning, I thought that it would be easier to publish in English, and that the German books would just be a byproduct mm-hmm. of my business. And it completely turned out the other way. I was mm-hmm. very wrong about that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The German market is small, but it's mm-hmm. still, we have lots of readers who are also, mm-hmm. Who do pay money for the books. They like to pay, they're used to paying money for books. Mm-hmm. Let's put it that way, because we have a law in Germany mm-hmm. that you have, books have to, always have the same price. It's like, it's, you can't change the price.
Oh, really? Too much.
When you're on one platform, only on Amazon, it's okay mm-hmm. To change the price, but you can't do it like too often. Mm-hmm. And if you're on different platforms, you can have a different price, especially not with print books. If you have set a price, that's the price. Mm-hmm. So it's an old law. It's weird, mm-hmm. but readers are used to paying money for books, mm-hmm. and they do. So it's awesome. It is, if you have a loyal readership, mm-hmm. You really can earn some money here. It's possible.
Amazing. That is great. I love that.
Yeah. And so you, so the thing is you can't, you can have a different price for your ebook and your print book.
Yes.
You can't be, they don't want you changing the prices on those constantly, right?
Like, yeah,
up and down. Okay.
I mean, nobody's really
monitoring it that much.
Like, but
still, the book
yeah. But it's, if you go to a normal bookstore, it's really hard to, they can't discount books, like all the time. This mm-hmm. it's the law is weird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's just a different market. And would you say that like mm-hmm. the ebooks or e-readers reading in digital is growing there, or do people read more in print or in ebook, do you think?
Since the pandemic.
Genre.
Mm-hmm. A little bit on genre. So I think the fantasy readers, they love still love their print books mm-hmm. with the they have the glitter on the mm-hmm. on the cover and stuff yeah. like that. But they also do read with an e-reader a lot. Since the pandemic, more people read ebooks.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw that in the first Christmas mm-hmm. was in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
Many people got e-readers
and
started reading that way. And of course, the Romance readers who read a lot, of course, they have Kindle Unlimited.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we're going to get more into German and translations mm-hmm. and stuff, but we'll get into that and just we'll circle back. We always want to ask, though, too, what's the most important lesson you've learned?
I think it's again about myself.
Knowing yourself, yeah.
Yeah, it always comes back to that. And mm-hmm. also to know what works for me.
Right.
And what works for somebody else doesn't necessarily mean it has to work for me. And I don't have to be disappointed, but I can try,
mm-hmm.
but I also change lanes very fast. Mm-hmm. I try things out, and if they don't work, I don't do them anymore. But I can mm-hmm. feel it. Yeah, I can feel it really quickly. what is good for me and what not, and also like taking this seriously and thinking it's a business. And it's not mm-hmm. just a hobby that I do on the side, or
right.
Really treating it with a business mindset. Mm-hmm. And this is something sometimes that I miss with my peers, that mm-hmm. some of them are just not, they're just, no, I'm a creative. Yes, you are, mm-hmm. but it's also a business. And this mm-hmm. is what this is the biggest lesson that I had to learn, that we also have to earn money
mm-hmm.
if we want to do this long term.
Right.
Or at least if I want to do this long term, I have to earn money.
Right.
Let's put it that way. I can only talk about myself.
That's correct. Well, if you were starting over today, what would you do differently?
I think it depends on when to which time I look back. If I look back to the 20 years when I was mm-hmm. still in university, I think I would go really fast to getting to know myself and my process better mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and also going straight to romance novels, because in the beginning I thought I was wanted to write historicals
mm-hmm.
and it took me some time to find that I always liked the love story in the historical
mm-hmm.
This is my I just love the feeling of love. It's just mm-hmm. and giving this to readers and giving them a good time. Mm-hmm. That's important. So I would go straight to romance, and I never tried to. I never really tried to publish at a big publishing house.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I would try to speed up self-publishing if I. yeah, it's yeah. Going straight there because. And I thought, so when I published my first book 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago, and then I wrote a historical romance, then I wrote time travel, and then I wrote small town romance.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought at that time, I should have taken different pen names for each subgenre. But now I think it's actually a good thing because my readers, I take them with me because they like me as a person. And because my books are always the same. They always give you the same feeling. They have the same heat level.
Yep.
Everything. The character development is in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And so I can take readers with me. And I couldn't have done this if I had different pen names and would have been so much harder. So I think I wouldn't change that much.
Okay.
I would still go for the newsletter.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah.
Can't go wrong with that. That was really smart.
Yeah.
I was lucky to get the right information at the right time. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit more about the German market. And so I think a lot of authors, we hear that German is a good language to translate into. Is there a certain, do you have any advice like when authors should do that? Should you wait until you have a certain couple of books or?
That's a very good question. I think you shouldn't start doing translations if you can do only one or two books. And that not only means that you only have those books, but you also you are able to translate them to pay for the cost of translation. Because translations are so expensive. And yes, you can use AI for it, but it's you can read it, like you can hear it. It sounds differently if when AI translated it. So I would try to go with a German translator if possible, but it's so much more expensive, but I think it's worth it in the end. Because some readers don't see it, but the majority does. It doesn't flow because German language is a little bit complex sometimes. So I would try to save some money to get, I don't know, at least 5, 6, 7 or maybe more books done and then publish them quite fast. I mean, the same how you would do rapid release maybe in the US market and always have the next book on pre-order and stuff like that. And also do a newsletter and how somehow communicate with your readers because they really do like that. If you if they see that you are a person and it's not just a book that you that maybe even might have been written by AI because they don't know.
They don't know. Well, would you suggest that like we do a newsletter and have it translated to German or?
Yes, something like that. Or have there are some BAs who specialize, who are German and speak English very well, who could help you with that. Also with blurbs and stuff like that too.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Get the right feeling for it. But a newsletter, you can also translate with AI. That's no problem at all. Because they know that you don't speak German. That's fine. Right. But if you, and you can also say this newsletter is translated with AI, but I wrote it as specifically for my German readers.
Right. Okay.
That's fine. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's good to know.
That's good to know. Yeah. That is good to know. Okay. Any genres that tend to do better than others for German translation?
Any genres or
which genres do the best? Let's do it that way.
I think romance always sells. Because the German authors also they set their books in the US a lot of times. So we have many books who are set in New York, New York City, or in California. And people just love that. The German readers do love that. The dark romances right now, I mean, everywhere, they just, people like this a lot. I don't. I'm too positive for them. I need happy times. But it's they sell. You can see this in the chart. Also, interestingly, gay romance is getting it's getting a lot more traction here. Lucy Lennox, I think, and Nora Phoenix, they are selling quite well with their translations. Then fantasy is a genre that people like to read. There are some who had some success. I think also you're writing cozy mysteries, right, Sarah?
Yeah, there is.
I think even that. But it's the Germans, they had a tendency to just read the Scandinavian mysteries, like the,
which tend to be darker and grittier.
Yes. But there was, I think in the 2000s, there was a time when everybody read them. It's gotten a little bit less. And I think in the, but what I've seen in the German Kindle charts, it's getting darker. Like the thrillers, the bloody cover, they come back. During the pandemic, it was all just happy pink and light blue and stuff. And another important thing is that the Germans don't like the cartoonish covers in romance, by the way. Really don't. It's starting a little bit, but it's, you can see immediately that it's an US author most of the time, or it's a translation. And most people think it's like a children's book. They don't buy covers like that.
I've always been a little hesitant, and I've talked about this on the podcast, but about translating my books because they're romantic comedies, you know, small town Texas rom-coms, and being colloquialisms and, you know, things that I use, such as useless as tits on a boar hog, or, you know, happy as ticks on a goat, might not translate to certain places.
It does not.
And so I didn't know if it would even be worth the money for me to translate comedies that are specific, you know, Texas. It's pretty specific Texas comedy kind of thing.
Yeah, it's really hard. I have a friend who lives in North Carolina, and she's from there, and she's also a writer. And I read her books. I'm like, I don't think they would translate because it's so, they're so Southern, and most of the things are just the Germans don't get it because they, for them, it's just the U.S.
Yeah.
So,
just New York or California.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe Florida.
Yeah. Well, that's good. I'm glad to know that I probably have made the right decision on that one. And then, maybe I'll take a turn for the dark side at some point, but I doubt it.
Yeah. If you do that, you should translate. No, it's really hard with the language. I was always wondering, like Lucy Score books, they have been translated and they're quite successful. So maybe I should read them and let you know how they translate, because I read them in English. There's also so much in between the lines. We say I can read that.
Like subtext,
Tell you. Yes.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Yeah. That would be an interesting thing to know, because they do well there. I know she's talked about it before. So,
What about like women's fiction type books, the kind of book club books? Do German readers want that or not?
So we don't have book clubs like you do. Mm-hmm.
You also made a face when she said book club.
Which basically was like, no.
I was trying to think of a book that is a book club book. And so we don't have, people don't know Oprah that well, or it's
Reese Witherspoon.
But like, they know them from, or Reese from movies, but that's it. And we don't have the same book club culture here. And I don't think they. No, I don't know.
Okay. Just curious.
Good to know.
Yeah. So tell us about your how you're organizing the promotion that you say is similar, like a German Zoe Bub. How have you gone about that?
Yeah. So I read Zoe's book. Can't remember the title. Sorry. But in there, she said, like, if you want to organize something like that, feel free to do so, because it's many people would love to, but it really takes some work. I'm just like, okay, I can do it. And so I asked some author friends and they agreed. And I think we're now like 100 authors.
Wow.
Oh, that's great.
2 years now. But we only do it twice a year, not every 3 months. And we accidentally ended up at this on the almost the same schedule as Zoe. And so we need to change this a little bit because she has so many books in there that our books disappear when we have when we are on the we need the Kindle the free Kindle charts for our for our books on a different time. But actually, so there are many German readers who also read in English. So it's also sometimes it really helps to advertise to German readers who read English books.
And is it mostly romance centered?
Our Zoe Bub. It's called actually in German. It's called Ich liebe Bücher, which is I love books. In English,
we might just call it a Julia Bub.
Yeah,
I can do that.
I was muted, but I said that just rolls off the tongue with my accent.
That's nice. We have mostly romance and romantic fantasy books, but we also do twice a year a 99-cent promo, and this also works well.
Yeah. That's great.
Cool. Well, I looked up Zoe York's book. She has 2 nonfiction, Romance Your Brand and Romance Your Plan. So it was probably one of those, I imagine.
Yeah.
That's great.
People are curious.
Can we put it in the show notes?
Yeah.
Put them in the show notes. Yeah. Give Zoe a little shout out there.
It was really good.
Yeah. She's one of the most brilliant people I know. Like, if Zoe says it, there are a few people like that for me. You know, if they say David Goggren, I'll do whatever. Zoe, I will do. I mean, she's just so smart. She's so smart.
I reached out to her when I read the book and I said, like, okay, I will do it. And then I reached out to her and she graciously wrote back and told me a few things, how to set it up and so on. So that was really, really great.
She's
and
awesome.
I've been following her advice and it works like magic.
That's awesome. Well, tell us about your conference that you do for German authors. And you said it's sort of like a RAM for German authors, Romance Author Mastermind, but it's similar.
Yeah. So I'm a learner junkie. I always go to every conference I go. I always watch them online. I buy all the tickets and it's so much fun. And I listen to all the podcasts. I've been listening to your podcasts, I don't know, for 3 or 4 years. I don't know how long you've been doing it.
2020.
From the beginning. Yeah.
Thank you.
And so I've attended Romance Author Mastermind 2 times virtually. And I always wanted this for Germany because there are so many things that we can do. We don't have BookBub here. So when somebody tells you all about how to apply for BookBub deals, like, yeah, great.
I do that.
And we have, for example, we don't have ACX here. So if I ever wanted to do something with Audible, I can't. I always have to hire my own narrator and it's so expensive and stuff. So it's really different. Editing is so much more expensive, all the things. And so I wanted to do it here and I found another author, Annie Stone, and she's also a learner and she's a number one learner actually. And so we decided to do it together. And so we put it together. The first one will be next February. And We have 50 participants now.
That's amazing. Yeah, that's great.
It's really cool. But we also found that it's hard to find speakers because we learn so much, the two of us, we learn so much through podcasts and books and conferences and so on, that we know a lot already. And we thought that we would learn something there. But then my husband at some point said, actually, you should say goodbye to the idea that you will learn something.
Yes.
the participants will do. But
yes, this is a service you're performing. It's not.
Yeah.
So, it's not for you.
But yeah. I actually invited Theodora Taylor.
Which is going to be amazing.
And I know I will learn something from her.
Yes,
I'm very sure about that. I did all her courses and stuff. So it's, but I'm so looking forward to that and bringing her to Germany. And I think it's so important for authors to connect better and to, we are all in the same industry. We are not competitors for me.
No.
I think it's important to work together to, so we can all succeed. And it's always better to do this in person, not just online. So
That's what I was going to say, that even though you may not gain more knowledge about the industry or about specific things, the connections and friendships that will develop will they'll be amazing. And so that will probably be what you'll be happiest about.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And it's, for example, we have those two big book fairs in Germany. One is Frankfurt and the other one is Leipzig. And so I went to the Leipzig fair in April and we went to a dinner together, some authors, and there I found my VA that I hired right away. Yeah. And so these are the kind of information that you only get when you are together and you talk and not just, see each other online in Facebook groups or so.
Right. Mm-hmm. And listen, I mean, I learned something from listening to Theodora order lunch. I mean, she's just amazing. She just has such great insight. Your people are going to love her so much.
I'm so excited about it. Can't imagine.
Well, is registration still open for this if someone's listening and they're interested?
Yes. Okay. Yes, well, it's still open. Yeah.
We can put that link in the show notes. Will you send it to us?
Yeah, I can do that. It's That'd only in German, though.
That's okay. If they're German and they want to.
Yes. They have to speak German. Theodora is the only one who will speak in English, and we have somebody who translates.
That'll be great. That will be great.
Well, I think it's great to see other countries kind of coming along in self-publishing and developing their own courses and conferences and promotions. I think that's, it's showing that the industry is maturing around the world. And I think Germany kind of leads the way. Like romance always leads the way for promotion. I think Germany is probably the language in the country that's more interested in digital right now, in ebooks and so they're more open to self-publishing, I think, than some other countries. I don't know if you'd agree with that or not.
Yeah, I think so too. It's, definitely.
So I do have a question. Oh, go ahead.
No, fine. Okay.
Well, I was just going to ask about the running ads, if you have it, because German readers do read in English. If you were to run ads to Germany, everything should just be in English, correct? If your book is in English.
If your book is in English, yes.
Okay.
Definitely. You can also, with Facebook, you can also target people who live in Germany, but also who speak English. So you can target them. I would be happy if I got recommendations on Facebook in English.
Right.
I would love that.
And I may try just to see if.
Okay. And they're not as expensive as they are in the US. So the prices are really different.
Right.
When I'm coaching with my marketing coach and she's looking at my numbers, it's like, that's really cheap.
Well, is there anything else that you think in people who write in English but want to sell books in German should know about, or any other advice that you think we should talk about?
So the translator, we had this already. The cover is, I think it's really mm-hmm. important. I think that's what most people miss. They just use their English cover and you can see it because we have a lot less man chest, I would say. And it's they're just different. So maybe reach out to German cover designers. Mm-hmm. Most of them do speak English well. Mm-hmm. So I'm starting to think again if we can maybe put something together, like to have German cover designers who speak English, who could be a good source for English speaking authors.
And I know some authors who are like, oh, I'll just use my English cover because it will be so much cheaper and easier because, you know, I can just get it really quick. But maybe in the long run, that may not be the best choice, right?
Yeah. Just take a look at the German Kindle store. Mm-hmm. Just look at the covers. It's a different feel. Mm-hmm. And it's the same when we publish our books in English. We need to also change the covers because they're not interesting enough for you. the Germans, they're a little bit more pragmatic about mm-hmm. things. They use different fonts and stuff. I would always go for a newsletter or some way to connect with readers. Mm-hmm. Just so they get a feel for you. So if you have bonus scenes and stuff, I think it's worth it to build a newsletter through that and maybe find a VA in Germany if you really want to go deep, who can help you with that. There are a few people who do that. I think that's about it.
That's enough to get started, right?
I think that's great. Well, tell us what you think the best thing you've done to set yourself up for success has been.
Interesting. Wait. I think it's really trusting myself. And listening to my gut. Listening to all the advice, but only following the ones that really work for me.
That's great. Being discerning about what you hear and does it fit with you?
Yeah. And in the beginning, it's hard to do that because it's so much. There's so much out there. Right. And you think you have to do it all.
Right.
But you don't. Mm-hmm. And pick the things that work for you.
Right.
And what I do sometimes at Christmas, I tell my readers that they can win a book for somebody else, but they have to tell me who it is and why. And so they sent me all those notes, like, I want to win a book for my mother-in-law because she's always there for me and help me with the children and stuff, or for my friend who's sick. And most of the time I don't choose winners. I don't draw them. I just send them all because it's so much fun and I love it. And then and it's a win-win-win situation. So the last time I did it was like 200 books last year, but I signed them all for like, your friend, Sasha, whatever, won this book for you. And it was really a win-win-win situation. For everybody. And I got so many new readers out of that. But there were so many people who told me that it was crazy because it was too much money and it was too expensive and all this time sitting there and writing it. And I was spoiling my readers and stuff. Yeah. Yes, maybe. But for me, it worked so well. It felt so right. And I still have people who write me and say, oh, the first book I got was from your friend. From a friend who won it for me. And I read all the other books and it's so great and already told other people. And it's just, that makes me happy. And if I had followed other people's advice, I wouldn't have done that.
Nope.
And So
And you were doing something that is probably the most important thing, is building fandom. I mean, you're just building your fan base, not just with the people who read your book for the first time, but it's goodwill towards your current readers. And I mean, I think as we move forward with AI and all of that, it is going to be so much more important to have that fan base that really knows who we are and who and knows we want to know them and want to engage with them. And so I think I think it's a great idea.
Yeah. And it's really that I really like them. I genuinely like my readers. And I think that shows, and I allow myself, I give myself permission actually to do that. And I had to give myself permission like actively. Yes. And because it's not very common to do so. But this is also why I think if you put translations on the German market, go for a newsletter, get to know your readers. They're very sweet sometimes. They're lovely. So
that's awesome. Great advice.
And it's interesting because you're not only creating a connection between you and the reader, but also between your readers. Because if somebody reads that book, they can say, oh, thank you for recommending this to me. And then those two readers can talk about it. So it's good all the way around.
Yes.
I think it's very exciting. I love that idea. Well, so tell everybody where they can find your books and your conference and all that.
Okay. The problem is my website, everything is just in German.
Okay.
So if you read German, it's juliasterling.com. At least it's a .com domain. So if you find a DE at the end, it's actually not Denmark. Most people think it's Denmark. That's Germany because we have the name is Deutschland. And we have the romanscon.de. That's our conference. And my books are mostly on Amazon. I'm in KU. So because wide is in Germany is not, not the thing.
Not the thing right now.
All right. Well, we will have all those links in the show notes. And just thank you for coming on and sharing all this kind of the insights about Germany. It's been great to talk to you.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome.
Yeah. So we'll have all those links at wishidknownforwriters.com. And if you want to support the podcast, you can go to that same link /support. And thanks to Alexa Larberg for editing and producing the podcast and to Adriel Wiggins for doing the admin. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Wish I'd Known Then podcast. We hope this episode inspired you, empowered you, and made you laugh a little bit too. If you loved it, tell your friends about it. And if you feel so inclined, leave us a review. We look forward to being with you again next week.